Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon. American. We are going to have another exciting show here on Southern American. Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with my political savvy and suave, sophisticated, and oh-so-attractive co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Keep going. Keep going. You don't need to stop. Good afternoon, Annie, and good afternoon, everyone. Great to be here on another fun, exciting edition of Southern Sense, December 6th, 2013, with our special guest, Lee Pryke. Very excited to rock on, and before we even begin, since we will not be on tomorrow, we will always remember those on December 7th, 1941, a day which will live in infamy. Annie?
Yes, it is the 62nd anniversary of the invasion of Normandy, D-Day, and as always, we have to bow our heads and say a few moments of prayer for those brave men on that horrific invasion, which ended up turning the tide of World War II and bringing the Allies to victory. We asked so much of our youth, and in the end, they pay the ultimate sacrifice while we sit in the comfort of our easy chair. So, yes, thank you for bringing that up, Mike. So
yeah,
we got to have
I was going to say, what in the world was Hitler thinking? The Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor, and he declares war on us. I mean, looking back, of course, history is vague. That guy had to have been beyond insane. He was already fighting all these different fronts, and then he takes on, as the Japanese called it, the sleeping giant. Oh, boy.
Well,
we took care of them now, didn't we?
Oh, yes, we did. Yes, we did. We've got a lot to cover today. We've got a guest coming on. A guest is State Senator Lee Bright. He is challenging Lindsey Grahamnesty. Anyone who doesn't understand that, that's Senator Lindsey Graham, that rhino-in-chief from the state of South Carolina. And I am on my ever campaign of kicking him out. I want him fired. I want him booted. I want him blackballed from the state. I want him blackballed from the United States. Send him to China, to Russia. No, he can go to Egypt or Syria, anywhere else, but get him out of here. And that's going to be our rant today. So we're going to have Lee Bright. He is the leading challenger at this point, leading in the polls. He'll be coming on at quarter after the hour. People that are listening know that every show we start off with a dedication to a fallen hero. Sometimes we have it with multiple individuals. But I came across this one incident from the Korean War that, excuse me, I apologize, that is not in the history books. No one has talked about it. And, excuse me, I'm sorry, right now I'm just choking on a moment.
Well, take a moment, though. That's all good. You've got several.
Sorry about that. I was starting to choke there for a second.
Well,
I came across this
surviving.
Incident. Yeah, but this incident, no one really talks about it. No one's written, well, there is one book out about it, but I came across this website that's a dedication to it. It's a massacre at Hoensong, Korea, during the Korean War. The elements of the 2nd Infantry Division, who suffered severe and tragic losses on February 10th through 13th, 1951, at Hoensong, Korea. Over 3 days, 773 dead, with over 1,000 missing in action. Average death rate per day was 257 soldiers. So today's dedication goes out to these brave men that fought those horrific 3 days. And this is from landscaper.net. The grisly scene, horrible, almost beyond belief, shocked even the toughest men of the 7th Marine Regiment. Some averted their eyes. Others broke off their macho banter to talk in hushed, church-like tones. It was death that spooked them. Death that hung like an eerie cloud over the narrow valley north of Hoensong, Korea, that cold, quiet day in 1951. In early February, with the Chinese offensive stalled, UN commanders prepared a counterassault across the center of the Korean Peninsula. This time, however, the Republic of Korea, the ROK troops, were to do the bulk of the fighting, with elements of various U.S. infantry, artillery, and other units supporting them. The notion of Americans supporting ROK troops was very much an experiment, one U.S. leaders later regretted. What UN commanders didn't know was that communist forces also were launching a major offensive and had moved 4 Chinese and 2 North Korean divisions into the area north of the village of Hoensong. On February 11th, ROKs tangled with communist forces, quickly disintegrating the planned South Korean offensive. At one point, GIs of the supporting 15th Field Artillery Battalion, 2nd Division, encamped for the night, relying on ROK infantry for protection. When the Chinese attacked in the dark, the South Koreans fled. The enemy swarmed over the U.S. position. Some 204 artillerymen ultimately died, resulting in one of the most concentrated losses of American lives in the entire war, according to Joseph Gould in Korea, The Untold Story. Retreating, ROKs streamed south past U.S. support forces, allowing the Chinese to flank American positions. Soon, the Chinese owned the narrow, twisted valley north of Hoensong and the road that ran through it, the only escape route. Steep hills rose up on both sides of the road, turning the valley into a shooting gallery. The Chinese relentlessly rained mortar fire down on the withdrawing and vastly outnumbered GIs. Later came the hand-to-hand fighting. At times, said one battalion commander, UN troops lined on one side of the road and tossed grenades at the enemy, attacking from the other side of the road. Battle casualties, 38th Infantry Regiment, 460 killed in action. 15th Field Artillery Battalion, 208 killed in action. 503rd Field Artillery Battalion, 56 killed in action. During one withdrawal, forward observer for the mortar platoon, Sergeant Charles Long of M Company, 38th Infantry Regiment, 2nd Division, chose to remain at his position atop Hill 300. It was rapidly being overrun. So he wanted to use a better direct mortar fire on the Chinese. For a while, he held off the enemy with rifle fire and grenades. But his last radio message reported he was out of ammo. His last words to call for 40 rounds of high explosive fire on his own position. By that time, swarming with enemy soldiers. For his bravery, Long posthumously received the Medal of Honor. American rescue forces fought their way north from Hoang Son to the besieged units, only to find that a river of Chinese soldiers poured in behind them. Points secured just an hour or so earlier reverted quickly to enemy hands. U.S. infantrymen tried to clear an escape route for the howitzers, supply trucks, and other vehicles, but Chinese soldiers were everywhere. U.S. artillery fired point blank into ranks of attacking enemy, but it did little good. As soon as the withdrawing GIs pushed through one Chinese strong point, they would run smack into another, while enemy forces reformed behind them. Some 2,000 Chinese troops manned one enormous roadblock, but the route south was the only way out. So the Americans continued to run this meat grinder of a gauntlet towards Hoang Son, taking heavy losses all the way. Finally, the calm of weary survivors reached Hoang Son. GIs who made it to the village joined a more general and less hazardous retreat further south and lived to fight another day. Yet in the little valley to the north, there was only death. On March 7th, the 7th Marines re-entered the area north of Hoang Son for the first time since the rout 3 weeks earlier. Frozen in time, and frozen literally, the battle scene remained eerily preserved. Quote, everyone looked into the valley and saw the smoke twisting towards the sky, wrote Marine Bill Marrick in his book, Tan Vat. He continues, the smoke came from overturned trucks and jeeps. They had burned so long, only the frames remained. The area looked like an enormous graveyard with the bodies buried. The troops lay in the road, in the rice paddies, and in the cabs of the trucks that had not caught on fire. Hundreds of GI bodies remained where they had fallen. Quote, we had to push arms, legs, and heads to the side of the road so vehicles behind us would not run over the dead soldiers, wrote Marine Rod Bennett. Some GIs had been stripped naked by enemy soldiers. One naked soldier lay across the barrel of an anti-tank gun. In many trucks, dead Americans lay behind the wheel or hung out the doors. One truck contained two lifeless GIs and two dead Chinese soldiers. The road was blocked by a Sherman tank with one set of tracks blown off, wrote Merrick. The hatch was open and the tank commander was hanging out of it. His jacket was full of holes and blood made a big design on his back. Two GIs with their hands tied behind them had been shot in the back of the head. There were powder burns on the back of the caps they wore. Marines, sickened by the sight, erected a sign along the bloody strewn road. It read, Massacre Valley, scene of Harry S. Truman's police action. Nice going, Harry. U.S. units suffering losses in the Hoang Son debacle include elements of the 38th and 17th Infantry, 15th, 503rd, 49th, 96th, 674th Field Artillery Battalions, 82nd Anti-Aircraft Artillery Automatic Weapons Battalion, and the 187th Airborne. Several outfits incurred severe battle deaths. Korean War vet Dick Ecker, using the Army's Adjutant General's Korean War casualty file, determined the following breakdown by unit. 15th Field Artillery Battalion, 208, 106 killed in action and 102 in captivity. 503rd Field Artillery Battalion, 56, 27 killed in action and 29 in captivity. 38th Infantry Regiment, 462, 328 killed in action and 134 perished in captivity. Among the 15th dead was its commander, Lieutenant Colonel John Keith, and Master Sergeant Jimmy Holloway, both of whom, after being taken prisoner. Holloway was recommended for the Medal of Honor, but it was downgraded to the Distinguished Service Course, according to 15th historian Dan Gigliotti. Ecker summed it up succinctly. It was, of course, the nature of the fatalities in action that was the real tragedy. Many of them missing in action, never found and declared dead or captured and died in captivity. Because military authorities tried to hide the extent of the disaster, casualty figures regarding the Hoensong massacre are extremely jumbled. But according to a Time war correspondent, it was part of the most horribly concentrated display of American dead since the Korean War began. This was written by Gary Turbank from Missoula, Montana. He's a Vietnam veteran. We dedicate this show to these brave men and to all that have served, are serving, and will serve. We can never say thank you enough, and we dedicate this song to them, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Harrington. God bless them all.
Of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name,
that's Todd Allen Harrington, My Name is America. Now, Mike, we've got an exciting guest I'm going to bring up on here. going for Lindsey Graham's seat, and right now he's currently leading in the polls against him. And I want you to help me welcome aboard our state senator, Lee Bright. Good afternoon, Lee.
Hey, great. Thanks for having me.
All right. I think I lost my co-host.
No, you're right here.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Lee, I want to welcome you aboard. This is your second time here on the show, and I'm sure it will not be your last. I want to thank you for running against Lindsey Graham. This has been a campaign of mine to see someone of good quality to run against him. Thank you for doing that.
Well, we're glad to do it, and things are going well, and we just want to continue the momentum. We feel like that this is going to be a great upset. And I think it's going to turn the country around.
Yeah, it's still early because the primary is not until June 3rd. And we had Bill Connor on last week. And when I checked to see the date of the primary, he said first Tuesday in June. Turns out to be that's my birthday. And I told him the best birthday present you guys can give me is to see Lindsey Graham lose that primary.
Is that June the 10th?
Well,
is your birthday the 10th?
No, the 3rd. Thought he said it was the first Tuesday.
No, it's the 10th, June 10th.
Oh, all right. Then it's a belated birthday gift you can give me.
Yeah, I was going to say my daughter's birthday is the 10th. I thought you might share a birthday.
No.
Well, it'd be two birthdays. Lee, I'll start it off with two quick questions. Number one is, you know, as a conservative, I'm almost sick of my own party. I'm not sure who's liberal anymore or who's conservative. It seems like what used to be the right is more the left-right. I'm really confused. And secondly, you know, Lindsey Graham, why run against the establishment? I mean, he's the token Republican. He's the hand-picked lackey. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's around the state, there's been, around the country, there's been establishment candidates that's lost. I mean, you had
All right, Lee, are you on a mobile phone because you're breaking up somewhat?
I am, and I'm traveling, so it may be a little disadvantage there. Is that a little better?
That's a lot better. Thank you. Yes.
Okay, great.
All right, Mike was asking you about the GOP, and one of the things that came across was one of the questions I was going to ask you, too. Mitch McConnell recently came forward and said it was time for the GOP establishment to stand up to the Tea Party. But I don't think that's quite a very true statement.
Yeah, I think that, you know, basically we're going to have to stick to our guns. I mean, it's kind of funny, the establishment wants us around, you know, when they need our votes, but they never want to listen to our ideas, and I think we're just going to have to basically take our party back, and you got to do it one primary at a time.
Well, that's what we have to do. And right now, you've been getting a lot of endorsements. Who's the latest?
Well, we've had party chairman endorse us. Kevin Thomas endorsed us. I mean, we've had we've won every straw poll we've been involved in around the state. So it's been really going in the right direction. We've got some other endorsements. Bill Chumley, a House member, and Talbert Black. So, I mean, we've got some really strong folks that have gotten behind us on the campaign, and I think that's just going to continue to grow.
Yeah, and I think you'll have a good chance to also get an uptick in your numbers come January at the Tea Party convention up in Myrtle Beach, right?
Yeah, I think that's going to go really well for us. I mean, we've got overwhelming support, and you know, even amongst the York County GOP Executive Committee, not the Tea Party, but the actual Executive Committee, they did a straw poll, and we were ahead of Graham in that straw poll. We were first, Graham was second, I believe Mace was third. So it was we were a strong first place, and that was the Executive Committee, but not a Tea Party group.
Excellent. I like hearing that. I like hearing that.
Lee, if I'm an 18-year-old, just turning 18, and I'm standing in front of you, and I have, obviously, all these salesmen running for office. And, we all know our current incumbent. He should sell cars because that's all he does, and seem to paint all these pictures. Why vote for Lee? What would you say to this young male or female on why their vote should be casted for you?
Well, I'm the candidate with a record. I mean, I've voted, if you look at at conservative voting records around the state. I've got the most conservative in the legislature out of 170 members. You know, there was a cigarette tax compromise vote that was 169-1, and I'm the one vote. So I will stand up for the establishment, up to the entire legislature when needed. So there's not many people that can say that. Definitely none of them running right now.
Amen. Amen. A voice for conservatism, finally.
Oh, yeah. Lee does have a proven record, which we're going to go over
Lee,
of that.
Well, real quick, Annie just mentioned Mitch McConnell. So let's say there's a scenario. Let's say you're elected, and Mitch comes, puts his arm around you and says, Lee, let me show you how we're going to do things tomorrow. How do you address that? Because as we know, that's very that's every day in politics.
Well, I faced that in the state senate. I mean, I have gone against my party on so many different occasions. I mean, you know, the bottom line is I'm a conservative first. And, you know, the Republican establishment a lot of times has gotten to be so much like the Democrats, it's really hard to tell. And basically, you know, if it's going to give us more liberty and freedom, I'm going to support it. If it's going to take it away, I'm going to oppose it. And there's really not a lot of talk from anybody in leadership that's going to change my opinion.
All right, now, Lee, there's a lot of talk now about Obamacare because of the rollout on the 1st. And every single day you get more and more bombarded with Obamacare. And a lot of the Republicans are now saying, well, let's try to repair it. It's already the law of the land, so we can't repeal it. Let's repair it. What would your response to them be?
Well, we need to kill it. I mean, it's a job killer. It's a liberty killer. I mean, it's absolutely a plague on our land. And the fact that we would want to repair it, that's almost like having cancer and saying, let's repair the cancer. No, you got to kill it and eliminate it. I mean, I'm a cancer survivor, so I feel like I can make those analogies. But the bottom line is that government is destroying our lives. And the best thing we can do to fix our economy is get government out of the way. And what I say to folks about how we're going to have a recovery is we're not going to have a recovery in America until you have a recession in Washington.
All right. What do you mean by a recession in Washington?
41% of the new jobs are in Washington, D.C. right now. I mean, if you look at the 10 wealthiest counties in the country, 7 of them are suburban Washington, D.C. I mean, Washington has become basically taken the growth out of this country. It's all been in Washington, and it's hurt the private sector. Somebody's got to prop up that growth, and you know, it's either the private sector, which they're draining us to a huge extent, or it's the Federal Reserve, which is digitizing money that's just coming out of thin air. But either way, it's not healthy for the economy.
Well, I'd like to see the IRS fire a bunch of people. That would be a good first start.
Well, I think eliminating the IRS would be a job creator for this country, getting that burden off of the backs of businesses and American families.
Well, what do you say to somebody, Lee, if I'm sitting here and I'm like, why would I even change anything? I mean, look, I get a free phone, I get free health care, everything's free. Why change?
Well, you know, we've got to educate people, you know, to realize there is no free lunch. I mean, when you look at what's going on in the country, you know, this free health care, the first thing they've got is a premium to pay. And, you know, it's all a lie. And basically, it's going to be hard to convince folks in some of these blue states. But if we don't do it in South Carolina, I think there's no hope for the country.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I know Senator Tom Davis has a law, a legislation on the floor to nullify Obamacare.
I'm the lead sponsor of that bill. I'm the lead sponsor in the Senate. Chumley was the lead sponsor in the House. He may be a co-sponsor now, but he's actually been charged with the task of chairing a ad hoc subcommittee that Corson put together. That was, you know, supposed to move the bill forward, but yeah, I sponsored that actually with Chumley at the same time back when the session started there when we were fighting that.
Oh, excellent! I wasn't aware of that. I thought it was Tom's, but we got a caller coming in on the line. Let me see if I can bring this person in. Area code 803. You're on the air live. Who am I speaking to?
Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Where are you in South Carolina?
Oh, I'm coming down from Greenville, heading through Columbia now.
All right. You have a question for Senator Lee Bright?
I do. Senator, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You know, I guess we've had a new candidate come in to the race recently, and just you know, I think the big thing you mentioned a minute ago was your voting record. But basically when you're kind of separating candidates, I think you've kind of risen to the top there in all the candidates that come out. We got a new candidate. I guess how do you kind of differentiate yourself from maybe some of the newer candidates or a newer candidate that came out recently?
Yeah, yeah. The record is the primary issue. I mean, you know, people want to know what you're going to do when you get there, and if you've got somebody that's already been there and already cast the votes, you know, we've got a 100 with much of the Tea Party group and the South Pine Club for Growth, which has been very strong in limited government voice. You know, we've had 100 every year with those guys. So I mean, it's our record's proven, and you know, I think that's what we're seeing in the polls. I mean, the latest poll, you know, we were at 16%. And I believe Connor was at 2, and Mace was at 6, and Cash was at 5. And I think the previous poll, Connor was at 4, Mace was at 4, Cash was at 4, and we were at 15. So we've increased, and I think that you'll see that gap broaden here in the coming months.
Yeah, I think that's a big difference there because, you know, to some extent you could say Barack Obama ran a more conservative race against McCain than McCain did on some issues, but obviously we knew when he got to Washington what he was going to do, and he's doing it worse than we thought at the time. And you've got some candidates maybe who haven't been in office before, and, you know, you're not a career politician, but you've got people who they say they're going to go up there and vote a certain way, and you just don't know. And that's one of the benefits about having somebody like you who's been, you know, really a lion of the Senate and the Jim DeMint of the South Carolina State Senate. And, you know, now that we don't have Jim DeMint there, although Senator Scott's doing a fantastic job, we need two conservatives up there in the Senate, and I think you'd be a great pick for that. So keep doing what you're doing. How can we help, Senator? Is it a website or something we could donate money
yeah,
to?
Yeah, brightforsenate.com is the website, and people need to realize the average donation for Ted Cruz was $45. So if you can't give large contributions, you know, whatever you can do, be appreciated. Emailing your friends, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you need to spread the word. I mean, if we can grow that 16% to 20, 25, and 30, I think that Graham's days are numbered in the U.S. Senate.
All right, yes. Senator, I'm going to go on, and I'm going to do $45 a day, and I encourage everybody else to. So thank you all very much. Great show, guys.
Thank you,
Kevin. Kevin should be working on your campaign.
Yeah, no kidding. Quick question. What's happened to our party? Why is it, say, 25 years ago, if they talk like most Republicans, they'd have been court-martialed? I mean, and what the caller just said is accurate, and I disagree. I think had McCain been elected, I think he'd have been even more left to Obama.
Well, you know, the issue, we've had it for a long time. I mean, you know, Ford beat Reagan the first time out, so... You know, and of course you look at Goldwater and the fight he had. So, I mean, this happens. The country, it seems like every 20 or 30 years, you get a lot of big government Republicans that infiltrate the party and try to take over, and they're just basically Democrat lights. And we've had to fight them for a long time. And, you know, it's the eternal vigilance that our founders talked about that we're just going to have to keep the faith on.
All right, we got another caller coming in over here also. Area code 760, you're on the air live with Senator Lee Bright. Who am I speaking to?
My name is Hustuza, H-U-S-T-U-S-A.
Okay.
And I have a couple of quick points to make for Lee. Love his last name. I hope he comes up with some bright ideas for the Senate. And I was wanting to suggest that we take the vote away from anybody on a subsidy. These are bought votes, plain and simple. That's corruption at its finest. One other idea that I've had for decades, rather than a third party, let's divide Congress into thirds. Never let a majority rule ever again. It's something I call equally tripartitioned Congress. Google it.
That's an interesting thought. What's your thought on that, Senator?
I had not heard that. I'll Google it, look into it. You know, sometimes you have to play on the field your own. And, you know, the issue right now, I think that the quickest way to save the Republic is to retake the Republican Party for conservatives. And that's where my focus is. I've heard of a lot of ideas that you know, seem to be good ideas, but I think that next election, if we don't get it right in 2014, I don't know if there's going to be a Republic to save.
that is something that we've all been saying. And one of the reasons why it's really frightening is just recently during a hearing on Capitol Hill, a George Washington University Law School professor, Jonathan Turlett, was asked by Republican Bob Goodlatte out of Virginia about the impact of President Obama's unilateral changes to the Affordable Care Act. And this is what the professor said, and I want you to comment on it. The problem with what the president is doing is that he's not simply posing a danger to the constitutional system. He's becoming the very danger the Constitution was designed to avoid.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. There's a lot of wisdom in that. I mean, I watched Trey Gowdy's questioning just this week, you know, about if Obama could commute sentences and change sentences and have the impact on the mandatory minimums. Could he not, by executive fiat, extend people's sentences, especially when they were locked up? And I think that Obama is probably as dangerous to the Republic as Cornwallis was when he had troops in South Carolina. I think that if you don't realize that, then you may be a part of the problem. I mean, we are in a very dangerous time, and it's going to take men that realize the seriousness of it and are willing to take the fight to Obama. And I'm the guy to do that. It's obviously not Lindsey Graham.
Okay, we got a Skype caller coming in on the line. Skype caller, you're on the air live with Senator Lee Bright on Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to? Skype caller.
This is Al from Columbia.
Hi, Al. Do you have a question for the senator?
I do. Thank you, Senator, for running. Appreciate your service to our great state. My question centers around nominations. It seems like every time Obama nominates somebody for any position in government, people like Lindsey Graham and rhinos like John McCain do nothing but shepherd them right through the process. I want to know if Senator Bright will pledge to stop all Obama's nominees in Congress.
I would have filibustered Kagan and Sotomayor. I would have fought those nominations, and obviously he's, you know, with the Senate and Harry Reid and what they've done to change the filibuster rules, I think we've got to fight, you know, the field we're on now. I would have fought. I can't imagine Obama and myself agreeing on any nominations, because I know what his worldview is, and I know what his view of America is, and it's very contrary to my view and very contrary to the view of the founders. So I could see myself in steady hand-to-hand combat between now and 2016 if I'm in the U.S. Senate.
Well, thank you, Senator. So you're saying now that you would block all of Obama's nominees?
Yeah, I couldn't, you know, unless he would have a road to Damascus experience and decide to nominate conservatives, which I don't see that happening. I would be fighting every nomination he's had up to this point. I mean, I'm beyond disappointed in Graham when Graham said he would filibuster Brennan and some of the others, and then he turned around and voted for him. You can look at my record in the state Senate. I took the floor during joint session on a Supreme Court nomination to complain about the entire system, and we only got 20 votes out of 170 to block the slate of nominees, but I don't know if anybody that's done that, you know, in recent history had the courage to take the floor in joint session to try to bring basically attention to the problems we've got in Columbia, and I did the same thing in Washington.
Thank you, Senator.
Well, wait a minute. So, Senator, let's say that's the case. So how do you address, okay, say we're getting close, we have a nominee, and it's getting close down, and the president himself walks in, puts his arm, come on there, Lee, you know, my back needs a little scratching. Now, a month from now, you may need a little scratch. You're going to have President Obama here helping you out. Come on now. What do you say?
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that with me. I don't think there's. I'm the type of person. I don't see where we gain by feeding the alligators. You know, that's a theory that if you feed the alligator, it leaves you alone. Well, eventually, the alligator starts to, you know, take away your arms and legs. I mean, I just don't believe in dealing with people like Obama. You just gotta basically take the fight to him and try to survive it.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of excellent calls and fantastic questions. I love this. Our area code 704, you're on the air live with Senator Lee Bright. Who am I speaking to?
This is J.D.
Yeah, hi, J.D. Do you have a question for the senator?
Yes, sir. Right now, I had to write everything down simply just as a question. Obamacare is illegal. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say the federal government should be in the health care business. Same deal as Medicare. and said, don't you agree that it is against the Constitution for a federal government to be in creating these welfare programs like Obamacare and Medicare? And I just want to know, if elected, are you planning to get rid of both of them?
Well, the problem, prior to 1960, the federal government was not involved in health care. And all it's done is driven up the cost. And basically what's happened is with the Medicare system, we've got people that have paid into it their whole lives. It's kind of like Social Security. And they both were set up unsustainable. But the problem is now you've got people that are dependent on those things, so you've got to deal with them. But, I don't think that the federal government should be involved in health care ever. Same thing with education. I mean, it ought to be left to the states and the people. And the fact that we would trust the federal government with things that are that important was poor judgment. But now, you've got to deal with the fields that you're on, and there is requirements to take care of people on the Medicare system. But we ought to get away from Medicaid. That Medicaid is not required by the states. That basically coercion's used with the power of the purse to force the states into the Medicaid program. But Medicaid is very destructive.
Yeah, and the odd thing about this is with the Obamacare sign-up, 70% are going into Medicaid, and they don't pay a penny for Medicaid. It's the taxpayer that pays it.
Absolutely, it's a bad situation. It ought to be nonprofits and churches taking care of the folks that can financially take care of themselves. And when you leave it to the state, then the state treats those needy as hostages. And every time there's a budget debate, they threaten to harm the hostages, and that's the position these folks are in, and we've got to get away from that.
Yeah. Now, just to change the subject a little bit, you're a big proponent of bringing education down to the state and local level. One of the things the federal government came out with recently is the Common Core, which is really a similar program to No Child Left Behind. And in Illinois, a school book popped up, and in it the book supplements the Common Core curriculum but blames television for the negative behaviors of President Obama. And it says, quote, when Barry looked in the mirror, he saw a young black man, but he didn't know how to be black, and no one was there to teach him. He decided to act like the black characters he saw on TV. He started acting tough. He cursed. Was that what it meant to be black? As he got older, he started smoking and drinking. He tried drugs. Was that what it meant to be black? This is in a school book for fourth graders.
Yeah, the basically what's happening, and it's not just, the Common Core is bad, it's a bad situation, and I'm one of the sponsors to get rid of the Common Core, but the bottom line is we have got to have eternal vigilance on these textbooks. They have been indoctrinating our children way before the Common Core, and we've got to push back, and our state school board is one area where we need a lot more emphasis, and folks running for local school boards, we need more conservatives on the local school boards, but basically, if you really want to fix the problem and strike at the heart of the problem, you've got to get to school choice. Because once you get to school choice, then you'll start having competition, and then you can have some impact on the worldview in education.
Wow. I want you in there now. I don't even want to wait for June for the primary.
You're obviously a father, and you're a husband, and your kids are in South Carolina, in the South Carolina school. South Carolina schools. How do you feel, as a current state representative, how do you feel about the state, this is happening in my state of Michigan, the state coming in and just taking over locals, voiding elections?
It's the state when it comes to the school choice issue, we're fighting a huge battle. If you look at our state funding mechanism, basically, the school districts that are performing the poorest receive the most funding. So there's almost a direct correlation between increased funding and poor test results. Throwing money at it does not fix the problem. Obviously, parents are having good parents is the key, but it's also having competition. I think if you had some of these more depressed areas, if you had some folks involved, even some of these church schools could get involved and really change the dynamic in education. The average public or private school in the nation is $3,800 a year, and right now we're spending $11,000 per pupil in South Carolina, and in some of these districts that are performing the worst, we're spending
We're losing the senator. I have a funny feeling his line dropped off.
Well, that happens when you're driving.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
You're kind of like fading in and out, Senator.
Yeah, I'm traveling, actually heading towards Beaufort now, but what I was saying is that some of the worst performing school districts are getting 15,000 and 16,000 miles a kid in South Carolina. The average is 11,000, and the national average for private school was 3,800.
Yeah, and school choice is something that we really, truly do need. You know, here President Obama was talking about putting his kids in public school while he was running for election, but as soon as he got elected, he pops them into private school.
If you look at, you know, they basically a lot of these folks that are the most against kids having opportunities in private schools have their kids in private school, and it's because they don't want their kids to have to go to school with those other kids, and it's really that mentality of trying to be a little bit better, and that's the problem with this elite ruling class you've got in Washington and in Columbia, is that they want to have, you know, two separate Americas. They want one that they have access to, and the rest of us something else. And, I mean, it's just not right, and it's time for us to take our country and state back.
All right. Now, you're a strong proponent of the Second Amendment, and recently a couple of cities, I believe it was San Francisco, tried once again to limit the magazines and certain types of weapons. How do you stand on the Second Amendment?
Well, I'm the primary sponsor of the Constitutional Carry Bill. I have basically, I believe that you shouldn't have to go to the government to get a permit to assert a right. And, you know, as far as magazine restrictions, our Second Amendment is in place. Basically, our forefathers had just came from a tyrannical government. They did not want to face another one. So what they did was they put that Second Amendment to protect us from our own government. And that was the design for it. It didn't have anything to do with sportsmanship. It had everything to do with liberty. And I'm going to stand on that, in that gap, and I'm going to fight for liberty as long as I have the power to do it.
So you're saying no background checks or anything?
Yeah, I think that basically what it does is it gives them a list, so if they decide to come take our guns, they know who to take them from.
All right. Well, now we had the UN Treaty for the Small Arms, and it's sitting now, I believe, in the Senate floor. What would you be doing to that bill, to that treaty?
I would filibuster that. I mean, you know, that takes 2/3 to pass in the Senate, and I would stand on the floor, and I would believe that men like Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Lee would stand with me, and I don't believe they could get it passed. You know, these Democrats know that if they go strong enough against the guns, and I tell you what's been counterproductive is, you know, the NRA endorsed Harry Reid. And if the gun groups would stay together, which the NRA has kind of weakened in some areas, if they would stay together and stay strong, the Democrats wouldn't dare try to pass something like that.
Well, I hope that happens, because I hate to see this thing come through, and because it would give a firearms registry to our enemies. So enemies will know who has firearms, you know, which, what caliber and everything. It's a very scary treaty. Talking about scary, was recently Lindsey Graham and John McCain went to the White House and sat down with the Muslim Brotherhood. What would you have said had you been on the Senate floor at the time he did that?
So, I've been criticizing, and I think we're still getting some coverage on the comment that I made that John McCain and Lindsey Graham have become community organizers for the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, it's something that people see and they realize that it's a problem. So, you know, basically the Muslim Brotherhood has ties to Al-Qaeda, and the fact that we would be assisting them in any way. And you know, we need an American first foreign policy and quit trying to be nation builders. I mean, it hasn't worked. We need to basically make sure that our armed forces protect our country and our interests. And, you know, if we've got, basically you see that Graham and McCain as well want to put troops in harm's way, and we're not taking care of the veterans that are here harmed now. Well, we've got veterans that really are in need of help, and I thank God for the nonprofits that have come up and met a lot of these challenges, but that's the role of our federal government. They should be taking care of these veterans, and they're not.
Would you be proposing any sort of a bill to revamp the veterans' affairs?
Absolutely. It's a disgrace. This country is so turned upside down. You think about it. You've got people that are not willing to work. We will pay them not to work. We will provide them health care. We will provide them child care. We will provide them housing. We will provide them food. But yet our veteran comes home, and he has to beg for his health benefits. It's a travesty. It's a shame. And if I'm in the U.S. Senate, I will shout from the mountaintops, and I'll do everything I can to get that Veterans Administration revamped and brought into the 21st century and see that our veterans are taken care of.
All right. Now, ever since Obama had been elected to his first term, the Keystone Pipeline has been sitting there, and nothing has moved on it. What would you do to get movement on that?
Energy independence is the key, and that's something I would be fighting for. I mean, Obama has it's almost near treasonous the way they have denied us our own natural resources. If you look right now off the coast of Georgetown, if we had a permit, there's so much natural gas. We could be a net exporter of natural gas right off the coast of South Carolina. And you talk about the economic boom of this state and the jobs that would be produced. It would be a tremendous, tremendous boost to our economy. And it makes sense because all these terrorists and all these nations that are coming up against us, we're funding them through the oil. And if we had our own natural resources, they'd have a whole lot harder time coming against us.
Now, what about fracking?
I'm for all of the above. I'm for coal. I'm for fracking. I'm for offshore drilling. I'm for onshore drilling. I'm for drilling on private land, drilling on public land. We have to – basically, our natural resources are such an advantage we have over other nations and the ability to defend ourselves and provide for ourselves. And the fact that we're denying those based on this environmentalism that's turned into religion, and if – I don't know how many of your listeners are aware, but Lindsey Graham was one of the co-sponsors of the climate change legislation. He backed off of it towards the end, but he was one of the original sponsors. So he has been on the climate change, on the wrong side of climate change, and basically we've got to take this debate back. We all want clean air and water, but we also want a successful economy and a productive people, and this energy policy is hurting us.
All right, what about nuclear?
Oh, I'm also a fan of nuclear. I mean, I think there's a mix for all of it, and I think that it needs to be. The reason I'm so passionate about natural gas is the fact that we know we've got it right off the coast of South Carolina.
All right. Now, we've been giving a lot of subsidies to these green companies like Solyndra and Echo, and one by one we're watching them fall to the wayside. Would you be in support of any green development?
No, you know, it's got to be. It's just been a scam. I mean, it's been an absolute scam. And a lot of these folks have ties to the administration. And it just basically the free market is going to produce the best product. And we ought to let the free market decide. And that's why I think the natural gas thing would be so crucial. Because right now, when you look around the world, there's so much demand for natural gas. If we were to engage in that, I think you would see a tremendous boom to the economy. And there's been studies to show that.
Now, there's a couple of people that have been proposing a mileage tax. You know, for however far you drive your car, you are now being taxed because cars are not using as much gas as they used to. Would you be for something like that?
No, not at all. I mean, it's just enough. It's an invasion of privacy. It gives the government one more opportunity to be in our business. I want the government out of our business. I'm for the fair tax. You know, if we get straight to consumption. But as far as the government tracking the number of miles we drive, I think they've got enough information on us. They've got way too much, actually.
Yeah, just about every car has a GPS, and so all they have to do is just have the NSA tap into it. You know, speaking of the NSA, what would you do when you got to the Senate about the NSA and the collection of all of our records without a warrant?
Yeah, it's out of control. I mean, we're losing our Fourth Amendment rights. The Bill of Rights are under assault, and we've basically got a fight to secure them and take them back. And, you know, the Fourth Amendment is basically the NSA has violated it. And, you know, if you're going to have some folks that believe in liberty elected that believe that, you know, you can't sacrifice liberty for security. And we've got too many folks in the Congress that are willing to do just that.
All right. Cool, Mike.
So
I know you have
Justin Amash's bill, which not only defunds the NSA, but basically says these records need to be shredded. You would support something along those lines?
Yeah, absolutely. My understanding is he doesn't eliminate completely, but he does reduce it drastically, and I would be completely in support of that. So, you know, I think when it comes to Amash, there's very little that he and I would disagree on. That's my opinion. I haven't found anything up to this point, but eventually I'm sure there'll be something, but up to this point, nothing.
He's my congressman. I worked for him when he was a state representative. And
if somebody's told you, good job and thank you.
Yeah, Mike has worked on quite a few campaigns recently.
Yeah, Annie, we'll get Lee in there. Lee, then we get you in there, and then we'll get Justin, and then we'll get Annie in there, and then we'll be all set.
I tell you what, we've got a lot of good people on the outside. We got to get some on the inside.
Yeah, I just want to let people know the phone lines are open. It's 917-889-3675. Okay. And your
one question I have, sorry, Annie, I didn't mean to interrupt. Obviously, a big issue now is life. And many Republicans, they're pro-life candidates, but obviously we see once they get elected, I don't know, they're not so much, what's your stand on there, and how do we know that you're not going to say one thing and do another?
Well, I've actually shut down the Senate completely over the pro-life issue. I have sponsored the Life Against Conception bill, the same bill that passed in Texas and North Carolina about restricting the abortion clinics and regulating them. I sponsored that bill. I would argue I'm the most pro-life member of the legislature in South Carolina. I mean, we've got a lot of good pro-life legislators, but I'll put my record against anybody. I would give my life to end the abortion. I mean, this is basically genocide, and, you know, the role of government is to protect us from one another. We're not protecting the unborn, so I'm proud of the fact that I've done all that I can in the pro-life movement, but I plan to continue doing more, and when the session starts, I'm sure you'll be hearing more about it, but I have done what I can and will continue to do all I can. And the problem we've got in the pro-life movement is just like what we've got in the Second Amendment movement. We've got too many compromisers that are willing to roll over and try to get – they want to be treated nice at the cocktail parties, and they don't want to upset these legislators, but we got to beat some of these people that are so laissez-faire with our – you know, gun rights and aren't willing to fight for the unborn.
I love the story where you mentioned the cocktail party. There was a story that Ron Paul was busy in D.C., so for his 50th anniversary, his wife came over to the office with sandwiches. And apparently President Obama came right around the same time. And Ron Paul says, "We're busy, goodbye," and just closed the door in his face. Yeah, well, that's a story I think Rand told some of the other Tea Partiers, where this is the last time he'll come there, and his wife just stood looking at him, and he's like, "What kind of sandwiches did you bring?" So, I mean, that kind of story just makes you want to laugh, but that's the kind of attitude you just mentioned. It, you know, Ron Paul had the attitude he didn't even care about the cocktail parties. He didn't even want to be invited. He wasn't going anyways, and you need that mentality.
Yeah, and that's what I've done. I mean, I told people I wanted to have as many friends as I got before I got to Columbia because I didn't want to go down there with the intent of making some. I mean, making friends is all good and well, but I'd rather stick with my principle. And if it costs me friends in Washington or Columbia, I'm willing to take that risk.
All right. Amen. I want to try to mention your website, which is Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, 4, F-O-R, Senate.com. It's up on the chat room as well as on our show page, so anyone can click on it if they want to know more about your campaign. But you also have something about on your website. You were talking about how you would attack taxes to bring them more into a line. I want you to explain your plan on how to save us from the income tax on April 15th?
Well, the fair tax is to me, the best plan that I've seen that's the most comprehensive. I mean, if we can eliminate the IRS, I think, you know, not only getting to an America that does not punish success, that doesn't punish earnings, is a step in the right direction. The money we spend every year in complying with the tax code is obscene. And if we could get away from that, if you have unleashed the earning potential of the American people, I think that, you know, it would increase the living conditions of every American. So I am for getting rid of the IRS. I'm for the fair tax. I think that what happens is through the tax code, that's how they control us. They try to engineer the economy. And let's face it, I would debate anyone on if they can show me where the federal government has improved the situation, because they don't. I mean, you look at FEMA. I mean, the private sector has done so much better, you know, nonprofits when there's a disaster than FEMA ever has. So, you know, in every aspect, it's better to let the private sector rule, and you don't when you have an income tax that basically is riddled with loopholes and exemptions that are that basically the lobbyists in Washington have created.
Okay. Now, I had a question on the top of my head, and it just went right out the window. I know. It was about the budget. The Congress right now is going back over the budget, you know, and they were blaming the Republicans for the shutdown when it wasn't their fault at all. What would you be doing to the budget, especially with the Democrats saying that the Republicans are not compromising? What would you do to the budget to bring everything back in line? Would you try to make it balanced? Would you try to be drawing down the deficit? Or what would you specifically be doing to it?
Well, what they ought to have done is continued with the shutdown and just set things through piecemeal. I mean, that was the battle to have, and the fact that the Republican leadership changed was not surprising, but, you know, the bottom line is fund what's core government principles and don't fund the rest. I mean, if it's not a core government function, don't fund it, and let the Democrats, you know, deal with that, because it's their constituencies that rely on so much largesse from the government.
Yeah, now, what really stunned me, which is coming to light now, is the war memorial that was closed down when that whole busload of veterans came up from Texas, and they had been planning this trip for almost a year. Turn, the Democrats knew that it was going to coincide with the budget battle, and they've already planned to have that closed. Would you be doing something like hearings to expose these frauds?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were closing scenic highways that they didn't have anybody to, you know, there was nobody there that was supposed to be guarding the highways. I mean, the things they did was very vindictive, and it showed the character of Barack Obama. And I think that, you know, we need to be asking questions, and there needs to be more discussed about the cost that was imposed in the government shutdown that Barack Obama put upon us. So, I mean, I think it's an issue that we ought to be bringing forward. There ought to be more talk about it.
All right. And what about the other things, such as Fast and Furious?
Well, you know, I praise Trey Gowdy for the effort he's put into that. I mean, we still don't have answers. You know, basically, we ought to be having congressional hearings around the clock on all the things that Obama's done. I mean, Benghazi, we don't have answers on. I mean, I know that Graham has done a lot of media, but I don't see any answers, and he keeps saying he's going to have answers for us. But, you know, four Americans are dead, our ambassador was killed, and I've heard enough to realize that you know, we knew what was going on, and the fact that Hillary Clinton considered as a presidential nominee, and the fact that Lindsey Graham said, and we've got it on tape, talking about how she's one of the greatest Secretary of State of his lifetime, I don't think is the kind of leadership we need. Hillary Clinton needs to be held accountable, and she hasn't been up to this point.
Now, the same day Benghazi happened, no one's really talking about it. There was a small blurb on the news, but our embassy in Cairo, Egypt, was also attacked, and no one's asking questions about that.
Well, we're asleep at the wheel. I mean, our leaders are asleep at the wheel, and we've got, you know, we've got some good members of the South Carolina delegation, but between Lindsey Graham and most of the leadership at the House and the Senate, we're not doing our jobs when it comes to oversight on these issues. But if I'm in Washington, I can assure you that I will be pounding the table and finding out what's going on, and I surely won't be having a problem with his agenda when we don't have these answers.
All right. Now, right here in South Carolina, we've got 46 counties, and I believe it's four or five of the GOPs have actually censured Lindsey Graham. Wanted to mention up on GoPetition.com, there is a petition for the South Carolina citizens in support of censure of Lindsey Graham, and it's got little shy of 200 signatures on it so far. Are you in support of censuring Lindsey?
Yeah, I mean, it's going on around the state. I think that if parties want to do it, that's great. I mean, I think that he is well aware of his performance, and he's counting on the fact that there's enough moderate Republicans and Democrats that will vote this primary to save his seat. So it's our job to get the word out there, and I think censors are good things to do. But it's just a matter of basically, if we want to beat Lindsey Graham, we've got to get behind one candidate to oppose him and consolidate the forces and get to work. And that'll beat Lindsey Graham, but censors is a good thing. But the sooner we can coalesce around one candidate, I think the better chances we have to beat Lindsey.
Now, when the four of you entered into the race, I was getting a lot of calls just prior to that, and they were saying, what is the Tea Party doing in South Carolina to get rid of Lindsey Graham? And when the four, actually it was originally the three of you came out, to run against him. I was hearing people going, no, you only need one candidate to run. But it worked before with Mark Sanford. Will it work again against Graham?
I think the fact that having multiple candidates is not so bad as far as having somebody that's a clear lead, because it is hurting us with the national fundraising. So the sooner we have a candidate that's in the clear lead, which, you know, we've, in two consecutive polls, you know, we've risen. We're up by double digits in both polls. So, I mean, I think we're heading that direction. It's just a matter of consolidating the forces to take on Lindsay. But, you know, as far as the people here, they're pushing in the runoff, I think that's a good thing. But I think we do need to have a clear leader going forward.
All right.
If you are that leader, how do you address the national party when they basically say, you want our money, you're going to dance to our music, or at least play our music at your get-together?
Yeah, I don't think that that's going to be something that we're going to really – I'm not counting on any of that, even in the general election. I think that basically we're going to have to basically raise our own. I mean, the National Party wants a lot of control with those dollars, and I'm not really prepared to give that kind of control.
Okay. But it's going to be a problem, though, because if you have someone like Riz Priest that's controlling all of the purse strings, you know, how would you then attract money into your campaign?
Well, I talk to people every day, and I was at one time I was one of those donors. I mean, I think more and more people are starting to realize that they need to give groups like the Senate Conservative Fund. You know, people are getting involved with Club for Growth, Freedom Works, American Prosperity, and giving to the candidate direct. I mean, you know, you ought to give. You know, the maximum is $2,600, you know, per election cycle. You ought to max out to your candidates first before you get to a third party. And once you max out your candidates, then look closely at the third parties. And I would be very careful giving to a national party, because you never know where that money is going to be spent.
All right. Now, recently Graham was part of that Gang of Eight for that amnesty for illegal immigrants. What is your idea towards these illegal immigrants that are here using our services?
Well, you know, and of course, I've taken a lot of heat for this, but I'm for self-deportation. I mean, if you're here illegally and you break the law, you ought to be deported. I'm a protector of the Fourth Amendment, so I don't want American citizens, because their skin color happens to be a little bit darker, being asked for papers. But if you do break the law and you're found to be here illegally, then you should be deported. I'm just not for rewarding people that break the law.
So would you, then, if you had, for example, someone came across through a, say for example, a police incident where it's a domestic quarrel, and the police determine that even though no crime is committed, that one or both of the individuals are illegal, would you be also for deportation in that instance?
Yeah, I mean, if it's, but like I said, I want to be very careful. I don't want that to be an excuse. I don't want, you know, for someone to be seen going down the road in an argument and get pulled over to check their citizenship. But yes, if they were found to be illegal, then I'm for deportation.
All right. Now, we have not just the border to the south and the border to the north. Just basically every single state has an open portal through their airports. What would you be doing to help screen against illegals entering through those areas, not just the borders, but through the airports? And
I think a lot of it is to do with the problem. You know, if you think about the Boston bombers, they were given asylum here because of their country. They were in fear for their lives, but yet they were allowed to return to their country and then come back to the U.S. So I think we've got some major problems in our immigration system. Now, I've been through the airports, and it seems that's pretty well, you know, as far as coverage. You know, I left the country and came back in and really went through a lot of hoops to get back into the country, and I'm a U.S. citizen. So from what I can tell, you know, from the outside looking in, it seems like we're in pretty good shape there. I think we actually let people in we should let in. I think that's the problem. I think our screening is as far as who we let in, I think we need to take a closer look.
All right. Now, when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she made an agreement with the Saudi Arabia where the Saudi Arabians did not submit people for screening on our end. She allowed the Saudi Arabians to screen their own citizens and determine whether or not they're able to travel to the United States. Oh, would you be in favor, or would you be trying to reverse something like that? Did we lose Lee?
I think we did for a second. I'm kind of in a bad area again. I wouldn't have the these are our borders. It's our country. We ought to be screening folks on our end. As far as allowing other countries to determine who comes into ours, it's a definite question of our sovereignty.
Right. Now, prior to the 70s, entry into the United States for someone to emigrate here was often required a sponsor, required you to show that you had a place to stay, you had a job waiting for you before you could emigrate here. Now they don't have any requirement. Would you be willing to rewrite those laws?
I think it's definitely something we need to consider. I mean, you know, it's a obviously, you know, we want to have legal immigration, but we also need to keep some semblance of culture as far as letting anybody in at any time. So, I mean, I think that's something that could be looked into.
All right. Now, with these immigrations here, especially with the rise of La Raza and a couple of other organizations, everyone's toting this multiculturalism. But when I grew up, it was like America was the melting pot. We had a standard. There was something that was uniquely American, but now it's not. And English is not always the primary language. What would you be willing to do to help bring us back to a United States?
I'm sorry. You cut out on me just for a second.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. With this immigration, especially with the rise of groups like La Raza, everyone's toting this multiculturalism. It's Latinos versus blacks versus Chinese or Oriental versus white. Everyone's toting this multiculturalism, where originally when we were a nation, or even when I was growing up, it was a melting pot. There was always something uniquely American. You were American first, and then whatever your heritage was, you know, later. But you also united as American. Would you be willing to do something, I don't know whether or not it's symbolic or a law, that kind of like tries to break down that multiculturalism and make us once more a united country?
Well, I think that the immigration policy has something to do with that, and this thing of hyphenated Americans is not helpful. The fact that you know, supposedly Obama was supposed to unite us, but he's done more to divide us. I mean, I think that we need to view, you know, the folks here as Americans, and then, you know, through assimilation, when you bring immigrants here over time, you know, they become Americans, and I think it's a problem that we have got such an open borders crowd running the country. So, I mean, I would hope that we could get that under control.
Okay. Mike, do you have more questions? Did I lose my co-host?
Oh, I always have questions. Two quick ones. I know we're kind of winding down, but two quick questions. You're doing so well, I mean, in the Senate. Annie talks about you every 15 seconds, almost like she's your girlfriend on the side. But why leave the state? I mean, it seems like each election, your constituents, even among the opposition, seems to be supporting you as we move on. Why go to the federal level? And also, how is it – what do you foresee – as far as our movement, the conservatives, the people who really believe in the Constitution, where do you see us, say, in the next presidential election?
Well, one, the reason I'm willing to leave the South Carolina Senate to serve in the U.S. Senate is because there are enough, there are not enough, I wish there were more, but there are a lot of folks that are willing to pull the power back to the states at the state level. There's just not enough folks in Washington willing to push the power back to the states. So I think I would have a greater impact there. Plus, if we beat Lindsey Graham, it will send shockwaves around the nation. The moderates, the squeamish moderates who vote with the Democrats will realize that they could lose their seats as well. And it will have a tremendous – it goes to your second question when you talk about, you know, the White House and what's going to happen in 2016. If you beat Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, put Lee Bright in the U.S. Senate, you will have a conservative nominee because the conservative nomination will come through South Carolina. And I will be supporting a conservative constitutional candidate. So the best thing we can do is start electing true conservatives, U.S. Senate, into Congress, then have those folks helping the next president who is, you know, needs to be a conservative. That's how we're going to fix this country.
Well, let's hope that does happen. We got another caller coming in, area code 816. I'm not sure if this is Thomas or not. Is this Thomas?
Yes, Annie, who else would it be?
Okay. You have a question for Senator Lee Bright, who's running against Lindsey Graham.
Actually, Annie, I wanted to actually share something real quick and just get you guys, yours and your guest's opinion on this. Last few days, I've been running around like a chicken with my head cut off because of something that I don't even think you may have heard about. Back in August, there was a 3-month-old baby that was taken in for a circumcision in Memphis, Tennessee. And instead of circumcising him, they castrated him. And they tried to cover up the whole thing. Anyway, the young lady that it happened to, she reached out to her congressman in the 9th district, the mayor of Memphis. They all turned their backs on her because of the whole, what the association was with, the clinic associated with Planned Parenthood. So I just wanted to, Annie, give you a heads up and let you guys know what's coming down the pipe, because this is about to blow up big time because of what they did to the baby. And I'm hoping that you would be able to eventually get a hold of this young lady, because, Annie, it's bad. The baby is still suffering, and the Planned Parenthood, the clinic, they're trying to intimidate this young lady to keep her from even saying anything. So.
Okay. Now, I know that I heard a couple of stories about tied in with Planned Parenthood, Lee, where there were several forced sterilizations against the patient's permission. Would you be going after Planned Parenthood and their funding?
Well, I think Planned Parenthood should be funded to begin with. I mean, the problem we've got with Planned Parenthood is, I mean, that they are basically the lead in this genocide that is abortion, and the fact that they get any federal tax dollars or state tax dollars is a problem. So, I mean, I'm already on board in fighting Planned Parenthood funding. As a matter of fact, I put a proviso in the budget this year that we couldn't get Planned Parenthood out of the budget, but basically put them last on the list for funding. So there's things we can do, and I have been doing, and I will continue to do on a federal level. So, you know, I am not a fan of theirs, nor are they of mine.
Amen to that.
You got my vote from Missouri, even though I can't officially vote.
Hey, did you hear about the $45 to average donation? BrightForSenate.com. That's what Ted Cruz took to win, and anything you can do to help in that respect would help put us over the finish line.
Hey, yes. Andy, could you send me his Facebook, his link on Facebook, and I'll push it out. You know, I will definitely push it out, because any candidate that will go head-to-head with Planned Parenthood, they got my vote. Because, honestly, I don't know what the fear is from our conservative politicians is when it comes to Planned Parenthood. And I heard just a little bit of what you guys were saying before I said anything, but you were talking about how basically we need a candidate or a office holder who's not going to be a Lindsey Graham and capitulate to the Muslim Brotherhood and all those individuals. I mean, when did Lindsey Graham turn treasonous? I'm still scratching my head over that one. The Muslim Brotherhood, really? I mean, I guess I don't understand it. And I hope that in South Carolina, one, that they, I hope that Senator Scott gets reelected, and two, I hope that you do win, so that South Carolina can have two strong, very unflappable senators that can hopefully make a difference and be an example to the rest of our nation. So,
really, well, we plan to do just that, and I appreciate your support. Spread the word, and I appreciate the call.
Well, South Carolina need to take up what they do over there in Illinois and Chicago. Vote early and often. Then, Thomas, you could even vote like 5 times for Senator.
well, I appreciate you having
having me on the show. I've got to go into a meeting, but I really enjoyed it, and honored to have your support. And anything that you let your listeners know, brightforsenate.com, and I really enjoyed being on.
Well, anytime, my friend. And also, Lee, I got to say this, Annie, just before he goes. Well, you know, you're with being polite. Your wife and your daughters are very beautiful, and your wife, wow, she could be a model. She's like stunning.
Well, thank you so much. If it tells you anything, I am an overachiever.
Well, Lee, I want to thank you for joining us, and as Mike said, anytime, and I will be seeing you up in Myrtle Beach, and you'll be coming over here shortly after for our tea party meeting.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. That's Lee Bright for Senate running against Lindsey Graham. His website is leeforsenate.com, and it's not the number four, it's the word four, F-O-R, for Senate.com. And we've got another Skype caller in on the line, Mike. Let's see who we got here. Skype, you're on the air live with Southern Sense.
I just missed it by a few seconds. Jesus.
Hey, Joe. Where the heck have you? Dude. We're not talking to this man, Annie. He said he'd call back the next day, 2 months ago. We haven't heard from him. Remember when we had that guest? He was going to call and give that guest, whatever that guest we had. Ow.
Well, I'm like Genesis. You know, the world was created in 7 days. My day is 2 months.
Well, it didn't last long. Who was that, Annie? That guest lasted about 15 minutes before they hung up on Annie, as always. Who was that?
I know you're talking about Mike, but I forgot the guy's name too. In any case,
was it
Mr.
Colorado? Was it the guy called Mr. Colorado?
No. This was a
guest.
This was a politician running, and Annie asked. He came on after the guy who won, the congressman Mark Stanford. He came on just before or just after, and. I ended up hanging up anyways. He also had a prank caller calling for after. But anyway, it didn't last very long.
Well, I made this guy Representative Jim Carr or something like that run away the other day. I called the show, and this other show also has guests on, which are politicians. And so when I called in, I asked this guy some tough questions, which I wanted to ask this particular guy that you have in your show, Lee Bright. But I ran him off. He told the host, I didn't come here to be questioned like this. And the host actually let me stay on and question him, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, actually, Lee Bright, he has a proven record. He actually has a voting record that you can go on. He's got legislation he's proposed that you can actually look at. And when I say he's 100% conservative, he's actually 150% conservative. You know, he doesn't believe in any background checks for the firearms. He doesn't believe in any registration. And as he said, he has sponsored all legislations. He's written these bills to go against Planned Parenthood, to go against violations of the Second Amendment, go against civil liberties. He has a record to stand on, and that's why I wasn't afraid to bring him on and let you guys
cool.
go at him.
Ah, cool, Deb. What's his view on Israel?
He is very strong, very pro-Israel, and let me see.
That's what made the other guy run away, because I would have asked this guy, hey, Senator, why are $3 billion of my taxpayers and fellow taxpayers' money going towards Israel? And he would have said, well, they're an ally, just like the other guy said. And I would have said, okay, in what way is Israel an ally? How have they helped us?
Well, I don't know that he's actually for aid, because he mentioned about cutting off aid to other countries. But I don't know. For a minute, I had to make an adjustment on my phone, so I missed like about 2 minutes of the show. Joe, what's going on up in your state? Anything exciting? Blog Talk Radio. Our Blog Talk friends are all disappearing.
Yeah, did you hear about Perry?
No. What happened to Perry?
He disappeared too.
Well, I talked to him. Perry had the same problem Annie had. When I was gone from Annie's show during the election, Perry had like four shows. 10 minutes into the show, he got cut off, and he couldn't even dial back in. And he asked for a refund, and they told him to go to hell.
Really, huh? Well, you know what? Well, he's gone now, and I don't think it's because of lack of refunds. I think it's because he did something which he shouldn't have done, and BTR probably told him to get his ass off the air.
I don't know. I've not talked to him long enough to, you know, I only talked to him the one day.
Well, when you talk to him, you can ask him about it. He'll probably tell you that the scuttlebutt is that he won the lottery. I doubt if he won anything. Okay.
Well, guys, we're down to our last 4 minutes, and I mean, we had a really good show here, Joe, and I'm so sorry you came in so late.
Me too.
You know, better luck next time.
Yeah, and again, I want to ask you guys, if I do come in, and if I do come in on a foundation of interrogating your guests, is that okay?
As long as
I'm not going to curse them out, but I might get a little heated, because if your guest gets heated and says, you know what, I didn't come here to be interrogated like this, I'm going to say, well, you're running for senator, so yeah, you did come to get interrogated.
Well, when Annie runs for Congress, and will you come and be a co-host with me, and we'll grill her.
Oh, I'll grill her any day of the week. Any day.
All right, guys.
All right.
I just want to let you know that we'll be back here on Tuesday, and our guest Tuesday is going to be singer Vanessa Filter. She's got a new album out, Mike. She's one of your favorite ladies. She'll be calling in long distance from China, where she is.
Yay! I know.
Yeah, she hands off, Thomas. She belonged to me.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I want to thank everyone that we had joined in today. It was fantastic calls, good questions, and I'm just going to give a wave out to Sue from New Mexico, who's been sitting here very quietly listening in. Sue, you know we love you. So come join
us. Sue, I love you. This is Thomas.
Love you too, Thomas. But join us again on Tuesday, same time, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, have a very healthy, happy, and safe weekend. God bless.
All right, take care, guys.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up. Trouble
you've
face.
Been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
American.